Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy. Oh, we've got so much to talk about in this episode. I am so excited to be catching up with Maddie Buckner, OAM, I might add, founding director of Little Dreamers. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. You may be our first OAM, just saying.
It's such a fancy title and I get so uncomfortable around the title, but it is a fancy title and it's one that I'm very proud to have, and I'm happy to be here.
When did the OAM happen?
January 2019.
Yeah. Should be feeling a little more comfortable by now.
I mean, it should be. It isn't. But, and it's also like whenever I go to an event and because I forget to wear the pin quite often and I get told by people, oh, where's your pin? And I just, for men, I think it's really easy. They put the pin on one suit jacket and then they just whereas women, we wear different clothes. And I always feel like it's a bit showy, but it's good. It raises awareness about young carers and that's all that matters.
Yeah. Now, Little Dreamers, I have just loved watching this amazing not-for-profit just go from strength to strength to strength. And what you probably don't know is how often I look at what you're up to and look at the website because it is just incredible. So let's go back to the beginning. Just briefly, Cairnette Kids Club, age 9.
Yeah, 9. 2002, I had a very, very sick little brother who was in and out of hospital a lot. And I often felt quite isolated and lonely and had a lot of emotions that I didn't really have an outlet for. And my parents always taught me that if you don't like something and you don't agree with it, that you should do something about it. And so I took their advice and decided to start running fundraising events to raise money for an organization called CareNet, which doesn't exist anymore. But the idea was very similar to a big brother, big sister kind of mentoring program for the siblings of sick kids, and started running fundraising events for them. And to be honest, I think there was a part of me that all of a sudden thought people are seeing me and they're seeing me not just as my brother's older sister or my brother's carer, but as someone, as an individual. And I think that lit a fire up in me. And I haven't stopped since.
You certainly have not stopped since. So tell us about Little Dreamers. Like your first entrepreneurial business grew into Little Dreamers. Was that 2009?
Yeah, launched in 2009. And we launched with a cocktail party. I was 16 years old and decided that a cocktail party was what would make us look like we were older and that people should therefore be taking us seriously. I mean, I think people did take us seriously, but I think we also should have just rested into the fact that we were 16 years old, had absolutely no idea what we were doing, and that's okay as well. But I feel like we thought we had to give off this illusion that we were adults and we knew what we were doing. That's we very definitely silly. Didn't.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, but we had a cocktail party. We had Molly Meldrum and David Campbell launched our organization for us, and we launched with one program, which was a dream experience program. So a lot like Starlight or Make-A-Wish. We gave kids who had a sibling or a parent who was unwell or had a disability, we gave them an opportunity to do something that was all about them. So it might have been a hot air balloon or a girl's day out or running onto the ground with your favorite footy team. And it kind of went from there. We had families then asking us for holiday programs and camps and tutoring, and now we run really big range of support programs that are short-term, one-off, but also long-term programs. And we have teams based in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland. And we had about 10,000 engagements in our programs last year.
Absolutely amazing. So it started in Melbourne and it started very much as a neighbourhood-based experience.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Now you're down those three states down the East Coast. And how many in your team?
I think it's like 54 or 55 staff at the moment. We'll jump up to 60 in April because we're launching a counselling program. So exciting.
And in that 53, soon to be more team, who are those awesome humans?
They're a mixture of social workers, youth workers. We have people who have lived experience as carers and young carers. We also have ops people, so we have HR and finance and marketing and graphic design. Majority of our staff, when we started, we were hiring people who were super passionate. I've always thought that, at least for those non-technical roles, not things like counselling or social work, but for the non-technical roles, I've always thought you hire for passion because you can train skill. And we've got a lot more actually technically trained people now, which is great because we need it and our kids need it. But we have everyone on the team is incredibly passionate and very driven to ensure that young carers right up and down the eastern seaboard have the, support that they need.
Yeah. We'll talk about who the young carers are because I think that's really the point of getting you in here so that we can build some awareness about that. But you've got hundreds of volunteers as well.
Yes, hundreds. And most of them are either studying social work or studying teaching or studying psychology. And a lot of them also have lived experience as a carer or a young carer. Whether they know it or not, funnily enough, a lot of our staff and volunteers come to the organisation and then figure out that they were a young carer when they were younger, which is, it's always really nice to see that light bulb moment go off for people.
So as the, do you call yourself the director? Do you think of yourself as the director or the CEO? Like, what do you think your job is?
My official title is CEO.
Yeah.
I like to think of myself as a bit of an all-rounder, but and just someone who just does the work that needs to be done. But my official title is CEO.
And what does a week look like for you?
Oh my goodness. I think a week probably looks like engaging with donors. So a lot of fundraising and donor engagement, a lot of strategy work. So figuring out where are we going with the organization and if this opportunity pops up, does it align with what we want to be doing or is it something that would take us completely off that path? A lot of team management and making sure that we're on track with our targets, whether they're government set or funding set targets or whether they're ones that we've set ourselves. And I like being creative in my job, and I don't think of creative as that typical arts and crafts creative, but exploring different ways we can do things and finding efficiencies in different areas.
Yeah. Oh, creativity just shows up in so many ways, doesn't it?
I always thought I wasn't a creative person. My mum and my brother, very, very arty, like incredibly arty and very talented, and I cannot draw to save my life. And so I always thought growing up, I compared what I thought creativity was, because what I saw from them, I always thought, well, I'm not a creative person. And I think as I've grown up at Little Dreamers, I've realized that, yeah, creativity does come in so many different forms and we're so lucky.
Yeah, yeah. Who are the young carers out there across Australia?
A young carer is someone between the ages of 4 and 25 who provide unpaid care. They might have a parent, a sibling or a grandparent who has a chronic illness, mental illness, disability, substance use or conditions related to aging. So we have thousands of kids that are registered with our programs, and about a quarter care for a brother. We have about 20% that care for a sister. We have maybe 5% that care for a grandparent and the remainder care for a parent. And we have a lot of our kids care for someone with autism, but majority of our kids care for people with multiple diagnoses. So it's not straight cut. And a lot of our families come to us and mental health is not on the diagnosis and it's not on the referral form, but mental health is definitely in the family as well. And we have a lot of kids whose families are living below the poverty line, a huge number that are affected by drugs, alcohol, family violence, a lot that are disengaged or not refusing to go to school. Our families are complicated and they have so many different complex factors that all kind of layer on top of each other. But they're also the most phenomenal families that I've ever met. And I know that I grew up in a family like that. And I know that I grew up with caring responsibilities myself. But I look at these families and I think, firstly, aren't I the luckiest person in the world to get to know them? But also, how does the whole community not know that there are tens of thousands of kids giving up their childhood to provide unpaid care?
Yeah. And the savings as such, at what huge cost?
Yeah, it's $77 billion a year unpaid care has saved the Australian government.
Yeah. What do the young carers say to your team about their experiences?
We get a real mix of life sucks right through to I love my family and I'm so grateful that I get to do this and look at all the skills that I've built. But to be honest, those conversations around look at all the skills that I've built from my caring role, that comes out after they've engaged in some of our programs where they've been given the opportunity to explore what being a young carer actually meant for them growing up or means for them growing up. But for a lot of our kids, it's just normal. It's just life. And so they don't see it as anything different. And yeah, it's really interesting.
And when they engage with your services, what do they want? Like, do they sort of know what they want or what it can do? I'm just so curious about what happens in those first conversations.
When a young carer applies for support, so an application for support will come through to Little Dreamers either directly from the family, so it might be the parent referring them, it might be the young carer referring themselves if they're a little bit older, it might be a school, it might be an allied health professional that refers a young carer through, and our intake workers will get on the phone and they'll get to know them a little bit better. And during those phone calls, they'll chat with them about what are some of the goals that they might have. So is it social connection? Is it respite? Is it leadership skills? Is it mental health support? And from that, then we'll refer them into specific programs. If what they need goes well beyond what we are able to deliver, then we'll refer them out to other organizations as well to make sure that they're well supported. But a lot of young carers come to us and they say, I want to meet other people who have similar experiences. Or I want to get support with my education. Those are probably the two-est things, so social connection and education, but they leave with so much more.
Yeah, yeah. Whole new family.
Yeah.
April, what are we in? We're in 2024. So April 2024, the counselling services have started. Why did you decide to do that?
An opportunity presented itself under the federal government system called the Carer Gateway. So the Carer Gateway is the national, I guess, carer support version of the NDIS, but much, much smaller. And it offers a couple of key services, peer support, coaching, counselling is one of them. And there is not really a dedicated young carer counselling offering under the Carer Gateway. And we know that young carers and young people need things done in a different way. And we already offer peer support and coaching under the Carer Gateway, and we've had requests for counselling and for that more, we call it low-impact mental health support. And so we've launched our counselling program, and I'm so excited because young carers can get, they definitely get 6 sessions at no cost, and then they can get up to 12 at absolutely no out-of-pocket cost. And they're paired with a counsellor who has lived experience and who is trained to work with young carers, and such a powerful offering, one that I would have absolutely loved as a kid.
And I'll ask you that. And I thought, oh, maybe I won't. Oh, wow. So what do you think that's going to look like? Like, throw it out 12 months, the counselling service.
Oh, I would, okay, if the world was our oyster and money was no object, I would have counselling services offered both in person and online for young carers right across the Eastern Seaboard to start off with. But I would also be running professional development for other people working in counselling and mental health services to make sure that they're trained on how to support young carers, because it is different. I know that when I've seen psychologists and counsellors previously, and you always spend the first session talking about your family and your life, but I've never seen a psychologist or counsellor that has then not made a comment about how phenomenal my childhood must have been and how, you know, impactful my caring role, and look at the incredible things you're doing. And to be honest, it wasn't incredible. It was just my brother and my mum, and it was what I had to do. And I don't want to spend all of these sessions talking about my family. I want to explore things. And the benefit of having someone who's specially trained on young carers is that they don't have to go through all of that. And so I'd love to be able to offer professional development for other services to make sure that young carers can get access well beyond Little Dreamers, because we can't reach everyone and we shouldn't need to.
Yeah. And you've alluded to the funded, the Medicare program as well. And we all know that that package is just barely the sparkle on the top of the iceberg.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to be able to tackle that one as well, I guess.
It would be so nice. And I think that, you know, like, our families are so financially disadvantaged. And if you're going to have to choose between someone who's got a mental illness or a disability or a chronic illness in your family and getting them the medical support that they need versus a carer getting the mental health support that they need, most families will choose the medical need because they have to. And it means that our carers who are saving the government so much money are ending up really struggling personally because they don't have the support that they need at a cost of being able to make sure that someone else does.
Running a business isn't just about setting up shop and becoming complacent. It's about showing up for ourselves and our clients with a commitment to continuous improvement. We have to be honest with ourselves about where we're at and where we're going. That means identifying strengths and weaknesses so we can improve. After all, if we're remaining stagnant, how can we scale and build the business and life of our dreams? That's where the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz comes in. We're not talking horoscopes and horoscopia. This questionnaire is the perfect starting point for you to begin identifying your strengths, needs, and blind spots as an allied health business owner. The process is simple. Answer the 14 questions and we'll send you a personalized report that includes actionable steps for you to start taking your business to the next level. Ready to take your business into your own hands? Take the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz today.
And for many of them, it's a long, long, long time till they're so grown up that they've got jobs and can get themselves the care that they think they might need. Whereas what you're saying is a lot of it is supportable and improvable just a decade earlier.
We should be providing early intervention support for our young people to make sure that they don't end up as adults with years and years and years of trauma that they need to undo, when we could have been providing that support as young people to help them process it as they're going through it. And I say that as someone who didn't process it as I was going through it, and has had to work on that as a somewhat adult.
Somewhat, nearly adult, approaching resemblance of adulthood.
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
So Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria are very, very fortunate, but there's still a lot to the left.
Mm-hmm.
What do you reckon?
I would kill to have Little Dreamers in every state and territory in Australia, and we just need funding. But they're in saying that, there are organisations like Carers WA that have a phenomenal young carer support program. And so when families do come to us and they might live in other states, we do make sure that we refer them on to organisations that exist. And, you know, we do a lot of political advocacy work as well. And we've been involved. There was a parliamentary inquiry in 2023 that we were involved in to better recognise and support carers across Australia. And so is little dreamers, if the impact, if we can't be in person in every state, the impact we can have is making sure that there is support in every state, and that advocacy work we do have control over.
Yeah, yeah. But the big dream is to have supports right across.
Yes,
and definitely. Well. Yeah.
Yeah, everywhere. I mean, I would love one day for there to be a Little Dreamers USA or a Little Dreamers UK. Yeah. World domination.
Yeah, why not? I'm curious, do you have keys to doors and bricks and mortar offices, or are you running a remote team, or is it I think it's a bit of both.
It's a bit of both. So we have an office in Melbourne. We have an office in Brisbane. We work out of a shared office space in Bundaberg in Queensland. We work out of shared office spaces in New South Wales with one of our partner organisations, Higher Up. Our New South Wales team works out of Higher Up's office. We work very closely with our partner Wellways in Queensland and New South Wales and use some of their spaces. But our Geelong team, our work in Ballarat, while that's delivered in person, our teams often work from home.
As the CEO, how are you leading a multi-state work from office, work from home crew?
It's been really hard, and it's been something I've had to work on, because when we were just in Victoria, just in Melbourne, and we had one office, it was really easy to mold and shape and kind of lead that culture. And then you start not being able to see how the culture's kind of manifesting or come to life in different areas. We work off Slack, and we make sure that there are things on Slack, like we have GIFs on Slack so that you can send different things and really bring that culture in. We have monthly team meetings on Zoom. I travel a lot to Sydney and Brisbane in particular to hang out with the teams there in person, and I think it's really important that we do that. We bring our senior leadership team together in person at least once or twice a year. In 2022, we brought our entire team together for one team in-person team retreat, which was phenomenal as well.
Go.
We were very spoiled. We actually went to a winery in regional Victoria.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, but it's so powerful when you see the team that does work closely interstate together and you see them in person and you're able to kind of feel that little dreamer's spark. But it blows my mind when I see the different teams in person, especially when I go up to Queensland and we go to our Young Carers Festival up in Queensland, and I see that Little Dreamers is so much bigger than just me. And it is
bigger than a spreadsheet, than a CRM, bigger than you.
And it's such a surreal feeling, because this organization started in my bedroom with one two-drawer blue filing cabinet, and to see that there are now people that we employ in other states who are doing the work and creating this movement, it's phenomenal.
Are you able to describe the Little Dreamers team culture?
I can try. We, I like to think of it as serious, impactful programs with a sparkle of glitter. Mm-hmm. We like to bring the childlike nature into everything that we do. So I guess our three core values are humble, hungry, and kind. And we try to make sure that everyone who comes into contact with Little Dreamers feels what it's like to be a child again, but understands the weight of being a child with a caring responsibility.
They're good. They're good. They're good. So it hasn't always been rainbows and unicorns.
No, definitely not.
Where have been the more challenging moments?
Every time we think we're going to run out of money, I would say is probably the most challenging moment.
That would count. That would be right up there.
I think the most challenging moment we've ever had was probably end of 2023, where we thought we had 6 weeks to save the organization. Otherwise, we were going to have to close our doors. Mm-hmm. And I pulled every possible relationship and friendship we possibly could to restructure and keep the organization open. And with some very big thank you to some of our incredible partners, we restructured and we've come out much stronger and a much better organization than we ever have been before. But it was very touch and go. And I was sitting here trying to decide whether it was worth it and whether I was the right person to still do it. And I think that those are some really big questions to have to deal with. And it is definitely still worth it. We have so much left to do. And I do still think that I am the right person to do it. But I think those are conversations that I need to have with myself regularly to make sure that I only want to do this if that we're so passionate about this and there's so much work that needs to be done. And if at some point my passion isn't there anymore, we need to make sure that we get someone in who has that passion, because that's why it's so great that I'm still here and I'm not going anywhere at the moment.
Yeah, succession planning is something that so many business owners just don't think they need to do. But we've seen in the media this week that the CEO of one of the airlines is passing the baton. And to an extent, it was along the lines of, I've done my lap, I've done my stint. And for the next phase of the business, which is, you know, public listing on the ASX, that potentially does need a different sort of CEO. That's at least what we're hearing through the media. But yeah, they're wise words, Maddie, is to have that conversation with yourself and am I the best person and what's this next phase going to look like and who do I have to be for the next phase?
And I've been doing this for 22 years. Like I think my biggest problem is I don't know who I am without Little Dreamers. And so I need to make sure I can figure that out and make sure that we're doing the best thing at all times for our young people and for our team. It's a really interesting space to be, though, to think about that kind of stuff.
Is there anything, well, there will be always learnings that come out of those dark nights of the soul, but I'm wondering about what you've learned that you can put into play to prevent some of these dips again in the future.
Yeah, so I think financial sustainability is a big one. So looking at diversification of financials and making sure that all of our money is not coming from one place or one type of funding. So we're not constantly writing grant applications and relying on that, because they will dry up and there will be times where funding availability dips. I think the other thing is also being really open with my team and really open with our funders and making sure that I'm not pretending like everything's fine. I think I was of the illusion that donors don't want to know when you're struggling, but in reality they do, because they're the ones that can help you. And same with your team. I thought I had to give off this illusion that everything was peachy and fine and that I knew what I was doing all the time. And what I realized is that they have phenomenal skills and I don't need to pretend with them, because they have a lot of things they can bring to the table to help get out of times like that.
Yeah. And I remember you saying just then that it was about reaching out to people and sort of, I don't want to use the word leveraging, but just optimizing your connections and your network. And, you know, your network reaches so far, but if we think about a team of 53, they know they have other 53 networks as well. And I think this is a bit of a, I don't know, maybe COVID kind of dinted this a bit for us, but I think good networking, like positive, mutual, win-win networking, is really, really underestimated and really, really underused in business at the moment.
100%. I think it's all about, yeah, who do you know and who do they know? And to the point where I sat down with our senior leadership team and also with my parents and drew a map and said, I want to try and get to this person. What is my 6 degrees of separation to get to them? And who can I get to introduce me to them? And that worked really well for us.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a constant thing. That's just not a crisis strategy. That's a constant thing. Oh, so what else is on the whiteboard for, I guess, the next 12 months?
I think the next 12 months for us is all around getting really good at what we do well. I think over the past 3 years, we said yes to a lot of incredible opportunities that landed in our lap, and we grew really, really fast. And we've delivered some incredible support for young carers, but what we're trying to do now is really solidify where we're at become really strong, become really sustainable, and say yes to the right opportunities and no to the wrong ones, and get really comfortable with saying no, to make sure that we do what we're really good at and we can do it well. And then if down the track we want to grow more and we want to grow again, then at least we will be the strongest versions of ourselves to do that.
My brain kind of heard good functional systems in there as well, just saying.
And good functional systems, good functional systems is not what we have right now. So it's definitely a priority. Oh, not at all.
I can help you with that. You know where I live.
Yeah.
So listening to this podcast is a whole lot of allied health business owners. What would you like them to think about?
I would love them to think about identification of young carers and what young carers or how young people might come past or come through their businesses, whether you're working with the person with a disability or with the young person themselves. Everyone in allied health does come across young people, and making sure that they are seen as well and that they're referred to the right organisations, and also just making sure that adult carers are spoken with and that they're considered. It's not just about our young people, but I've seen the way that caring has taken a toll on my mum for caring for her parents, and it's hard for everyone involved, and we need to make sure that we're seeing them and recognising them and acknowledging the work that they do.
In the show notes, we'll put a link through to the Little Dreamers website. It's good pathways from the website into find out more or sign up for a newsletter or refer someone or refer yourself. Is that the best way for them to?
Yeah, definitely. And then we're also on social media. So if you would like to share anything with your networks, you can share whatever you want to from our social media accounts. What we try and do is all of our social media is very colourful and very fun, and puts that fun sparkle spin on a very serious topic and makes it hopefully more approachable and digestible as well.
Maddie, thank you so much for coming back in, because we did an episode years and years and years ago. So thank you so much for obviously everything that you do and everything that your team does, but to come in and share the adventure and where you're up to, and just build some awareness about these amazing young people.
Kathy, I've known you for what feels like my entire life, and I am so happy to be here, and thank you so much once again for sharing the Little Dreamer story.
You are very, very welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.